ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good morning. Welcome to AM. It's Wednesday, the 12th of November. I'm Sabra Lane, coming to you from Nipaluna, Hobart. Federal opposition leader Susan Lee will have the biggest test of her leadership so far as the party room meets in Canberra today to thrash out the Liberals' position on energy and the net zero carbon emissions policy. It appears the party's preparing to drop the net zero by 2050 target set by the Morrison coalition government as part of international climate negotiations. The backbench will get its say today, with the shadow cabinet likely to sign off on the new position tomorrow. Samantha Dick reports.
One aeroplane after another, Liberal parliamentarians descend on Canberra. The MPs and senators have been hauled back to the capital for today's Liberal Party room meeting to hash out whether to keep or abandon the coalition's net zero emissions target by 2050. Touching down on Tuesday evening, Liberal Senator Anne Rustin, who's previously spoken in favour of retaining a commitment to net zero, refused to give anything away.
Look, I think we need to not get ahead of ourselves. As I said, I'm looking forward to hearing what all my colleagues have got to say tomorrow.
Outspoken West Australian MP Andrew Hastie, who's made no secret of his leadership ambitions or his staunch opposition to net zero, also remaining coy inside Canberra Airport.
Look, I'm here to discuss energy policy and I'm looking forward to it.
Debate over net zero has divided the coalition, with the National Party breaking away earlier this month and formally scrapping the target, framing the issue as a battle against high power prices and job losses in regional Australia. Moderates in the Liberal Party say they want to keep a net zero target in some form, recognising the political damage of dragging their feet on climate action, particularly among voters in inner city seats. But the right faction wants to abandon the target altogether, saying the party should instead prioritise bringing down energy prices. Richard Holden, a leading professor of economics at the University of New South Wales Business School, says Australians have a right to question why their power bills are so high, but said that had a lot to do with wholesale gas prices, then the race to renewables.
Power prices have gone up. There are a lot of reasons for that. And trying to attribute that all to the energy transition is, you know, somewhere between disingenuous and silly.
Professor Holden says if the Liberal Party does decide to abandon a net zero target by 2050, the next questions are, what will be their alternative? And what message does that send to international investors?
I think it really depends on whether it's abandoning our ambition to reduce emissions and abandoning that ambition in the eyes of the global community, or whether we're just being more realistic about what we can achieve. And I think that's a little bit of the tension that's going on within the Liberal Party.
Amanda McKenzie, the CEO of the Climate Council, says aside from risking the health of international treasures like the Great Barrier Reef, any perceived lack of urgency to address global warming would damage investor confidence.
Investors would think twice before bringing their money here because the policy settings could well change dramatically at the next election.
That's Amanda McKenzie from the Climate Council, ending that report by Samantha Dick. For his analysis, I was joined earlier by the ABC's national political lead and host of Insiders, David Spears. David, what's your sense of what will come out of today's meeting?
Sabra, I think there's a few things we can predict safely, and that is that the Liberal Party room will broadly agree on dumping the net zero target by 2050 as a legislated target and even attached to that 2050 date. They will want to prioritise lowering power prices over emissions reduction, and they will broadly want to stay in the Paris Agreement. There will be disagreement, though, over whether there will be any form of commitment or aspiration or mention of those words net zero being achieved in the second half of the century. So that's where the fault line lies. There won't be a resolution of these things today. Today is about Liberal MPs voicing their views. Tomorrow is when the Liberal shadow cabinet members will meet to try and settle a position. And only then, it seems, will Susan Lee, as the leader, state her own position.
And what about the possible ramifications for the coalition and its electoral chances?
Well, for the Coalition as a team between the Liberals and Nationals, this has been an enormous test and difficulty. The Nationals really did gazump the Liberals by getting in early with their position to abandon net zero, and that's put enormous pressure on the Liberals. So, the Liberals clearly are being pushed by that position. And if they reach a position that matches what the Nationals have done, fine. But if they don't, there will have to be further negotiations beyond tomorrow. So over Friday and Saturday, and then Coalition members will meet on Sunday afternoon to try and finalise a position. So it's still unclear whether that landing point can be achieved, or whether this could threaten further tensions and potentially even a split within the Coalition, although I think that seems unlikely at this point.
What about Susan Lee's leadership? Her key supporters, moderates, have said that they'll quit shadow cabinet if net zero's dropped. What is the degree of difficulty for her today?
Well, this is, Sabra, without question, the biggest test Susan Lee has faced in a relatively short time in the leadership, only 6 months. And she has adopted an approach here of not wanting to state her position, take a stand, lead this debate. She has really stepped back, keen to draw a contrast to the captain's call approach of Peter Dutton on various things, and leave this to her colleagues to thoroughly debate and thrash out. The risk in doing that, however, has meant that she has looked like she's not in control of this, that she has not looked like she's led this debate. And we're now at a point where some of her own colleagues are saying, we need leadership on this. So it has come at a cost to her, but ultimately this is the approach she wanted to take, to give her colleagues the chance to have their own say and reach their own position, and then she will adopt that position. Look, it seems unlikely there'll be any move against her today. The players on both the Conservative and moderate side are talking that down. However, in this sort of volatile and uncertain climate, as you know, Sabra, anything can happen. I think more likely, though, is they get through this week. It's messy. They limp through to the end of the year, and then those leadership questions will arise early next year. But there's no doubt Susan Lee has been damaged by all of this.
The ABC's David Spears there. Australia's national environmental laws, known as the EPBC Act, are more than 25 years old and they're currently before the Senate. Several attempts in previous years to update them have failed. Ken Henry was the Treasury Secretary for a decade under the Coalition and Labor governments. He now chairs the Nature Finance Council, which provides advice to the federal government, and he's chairman of the Australian Climate and Biodiversity Foundation, which advocates for the restoration of native forests. He says the proposed changes to the Act are good, but more needs to be done. He joined me earlier. Ken Henry, thanks for joining AM.
Pleasure to be with you.
You say the current laws have failed miserably, and you're giving a major speech in Queensland today, arguably ground zero for debate about this. Do you believe that the proposed changes before federal parliament are enough?
Well, I think they go a very long way. I think they certainly respond to the concerns that were raised in Professor Graham Samuel's report 5 years ago. Importantly, the proposed reforms include a ministerial power to make standards that protect matters of national environmental significance. They also contain a statutory definition of what is an unacceptable impact, so that there's more certainty for project proponents, but also there's more confidence, or there can be more confidence, that the environment is indeed being protected. Thirdly, there are reforms proposed to the offsets regime. Fourth, there's an independent National Environment Protection Agency. And fifth, an independent Environment Information Australia. Those things go a long way to improving a piece of legislation that has demonstrably failed over the past 25 years. But there are some features of the amendments around which there's been quite a lot of debate, and I think there's room for improvement here. There's a very broad national interest carve-out for the minister who can, use, if he chooses, he can use that national interest carve out to ignore his own legislation in any and every case, and that seems quite peculiar. And secondly, the Act does nothing to deal with well-known deforestation loopholes in the present Act, and that's a major issue in Queensland, where there's still large-scale clearing of native vegetation, including clearing that is having an adverse impact on the Great Barrier Reef, which of course is one of Queensland's greatest natural assets.
All governments do talk a big game on protecting the environment, but are they actually delivering?
No, they're not. No, they're not. I don't think they are anywhere in Australia delivering to the extent that they say that they want to. So they're not meeting their own targets, they're not meeting their own aspirations. And it's actually quite difficult for the Australian public to hold them to account because there's very little reporting of environmental outcomes.
You point out that Australia needs to triple its grid capacity within the next 4 years. That's a huge amount to deliver a reliable electricity grid and remove 2.5 times more carbon than we actually do now and put that into vegetation and soils.
That's correct, yeah.
Is Australia actually capable of doing that, given the fractious debates we're having in Canberra and within the community about building new renewable energy projects and transmission lines?
We've had fractious debates in this country about climate change for, well, you know, I've been witness to them for more than 25 years. And nevertheless, there has been huge progress. I mean, you'd have to say that Australia's renewable energy rollout is truly extraordinary. We have not achieved so much in terms of ensuring that the Australian landscape sequesters more carbon. And that's because we've been continuing to chop down trees and clear the land, contributing to the problem, having the Australian landscape emit more carbon into the atmosphere each year rather than sequester the carbon. So obviously we need to change some things. Now, the changes proposed in the amendments before the Australian Parliament right now, they go a long way to helping to accelerate action, or should go a long way to helping accelerate action. I mean, for example, the present uncertainty in the application of the legislation means that if you were a wind farm or solar farm proponent, you know, like you had a project, in 2018 you could expect that on average the approval would take 500 days. Now, that's a very, very long period of time, right? 500 days to get up something that's critical to Australia's future. And yet by 2021, that 500 days had blown out to 831 days. So we're going backwards, we're slowing down, we're not accelerating, and we do need to accelerate.
On a related theme, federally, the Coalition is still arguing about ditching or keeping the net zero carbon emissions policy by 2050. Do you scratch your head and wonder what's going on within the Coalition?
Well, yes, I do. And, you know, if 25 years ago somebody had told me that this would be happening right now in November 2025, I would have just simply laughed at them. I would hope that the people who are involved in the debates in the Coalition at the moment at some stage this week take the opportunity to pause and reflect and ask themselves what their role is. They've been elected by the people of Australia for a reason, and I would hope that in contemplating that reason they understand the awesome responsibility that they owe to future generations of Australians, that it's their job is not all about worrying about the cost of living in the present, but that they do whatever they can in a functioning democracy to ensure that future generations of Australians enjoy even more opportunity than has been available to us. And there's no way they're going to be able to argue that they're looking after future generations whilst they continue to avoid achieving net zero in a timely fashion.
Ken Henry, thank you.
Thank you.
Ken Henry is the chair of the Nature Finance Council. As high school students wrap up final exams, those preparing for uni are being warned to choose their course carefully, with new figures showing a 3-year humanities degree is now approaching $55,000. And that's the consequence of controversial legislation called Job Ready Graduates, passed in 2020, that raised costs for some degrees and lowered them for others. National Education and Parenting reporter Connor Duffy has the story.
Today, Tori Henderson has swapped her well-worn textbooks for playtime with her dog on the New South Wales south coast.
Come on, Coco.
But while the final bell has sounded on her school career, study is still on her mind as she considers university options.
I'm trying to opt for something that I'm actually going to enjoy, but it's going to cost me so much more.
Tori Henderson's first choice would be communications or arts, but the $55,000 price tag means she may head to TAFE or full-time work.
It's devastating. That is more than a house deposit nowadays. and how much is that going to put me behind everyone else when it comes to eventually the housing market, when it comes to getting car loans.
Hundreds of thousands of school leavers are grappling with that choice because of legislation known as Job Ready Graduates, introduced under Prime Minister Scott Morrison. It passed the Senate by a single vote in 2020 and aimed to funnel students away from some degrees by hiking costs for arts degrees and giving those studying nursing and maths a healthy discount. Professor Andrew Norton from Monash University says research shows it's failed at this aim and also left students with ballooning HEX debts.
And my concern is particularly for arts graduates, their income won't be enough to fully repay their debts, and so they will be left with a help debt hanging over them for their entire careers.
Universities too are opposed to the legislation, saying the complex formulas have reduced income by $1 billion a year across the sector. Luke Shea from Universities Australia is warning the thousands of job cuts causing conflict on campus will continue without urgent reform.
You can't put nearly $1 billion of financial pressure on a system each and every year without having this materialised with job cuts, with courses reduced, with infrastructure delayed.
A major government review released last February also found Job Ready Graduates had failed and urged its reform. Labor has opposed Job Ready Graduates since it was introduced in 2020, but is yet to give a timeline for its repeal, and Luke Shea is calling for more urgency.
We don't want to wait for more years for the government to kick the can down the road. It's time to do the reform and do it now.
In a statement, Education Minister Jason Clare said the government had introduced in full or in part 31 of 47 recommendations from the university's accord. It said there was more work to do, but its actions already had seen an extra $6.7 billion invested in higher education over the next decade.
Connor Duffy there. It sounds like something from a sci-fi or even a horror movie. Crocs dropping from trees. But it seems it's not fiction. Millions of years ago, crocodile species in Queensland may have dropped from trees onto unsuspecting prey. Angus Randall reports.
It's 10 million years after the death of the dinosaurs. Australia is still connected to Antarctica and South America. And you might want to watch the trees for leaping crocodiles.
It's a bit of a joke when you talk about Australia having dropped crocs, but the reality is we appear to have had them.
Professor Mike Archer is from UNSW. He's been digging up members of the extinct Mikosuchinae family of crocodiles for decades.
Crocodiles that actually spent time in the trees, probably jumping out on their prey, and these same weird crocodiles weren't behaving like normal crocodiles. They weren't sitting in the water.
Species of crocodiles that may have climbed trees to hunt have been found across Queensland and the Pacific. A global team of researchers has unearthed its oldest ancestor so far, living 55 million years ago on the edge of a lake that's now the town of Mergen, 250 kilometres northwest of Brisbane. And this creature was just as happy in the forest as it was in the water.
We're quite convinced we're talking about a kind of a temporary, shallow, freshwater lake in which these crocodiles came in perhaps only once a year to a crocodile, you know, egg-laying fest, and then probably retreated after that back into the forest to gobble up animals that didn't expect to be eaten by crocodiles in the middle of the forest.
It's unlikely that this earlier relative of the drop crocs was also leaping out of trees, as it was bigger and less suited to life above the ground. But Professor Archer can't rule it out.
We're finding the fossils in the deposit that formed in this lake. But what these crocodiles were doing when they weren't there, and even maybe more significantly, what were their young doing, the smaller ones, when they were in the forest? And maybe their young ones were also starting to nibble the rear ends of birds sitting up in the trees.
Researchers were able to confirm this crocodile moved from the lakeside to the forest when the lake dried up by analysing tiny fossilised eggshells, only a few millimetres in size. Sue Hand is an emeritus professor at UNSW and another member of the research team.
We're finding these little tiny bits of eggshell that are providing a whole different perspective on the biology of many of these groups.
Mergen has been a fossil hotspot for more than 40 years, for more than just crocodiles. Professor Hand says the town's residents play a vital role in finding new fossil deposits. 2 years ago, Mergen opened its own fossil museum, featuring some of the objects discovered over the years. Glenda Geraghty is a volunteer at the museum called 55 Million Years Ago.
I always wanted to be a paleontologist when I was a kid, but in my day, girls didn't do that sort of thing. So it's been quite a trip for me to actually get into this sort of thing.
That's volunteer Glenda Geraghty. Angus Randall reporting. That's AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm Sabra Lane.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley here, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. Donald Trump's threatening $1 billion lawsuit against the BBC, which has frankly had one of the worst weeks in its history. Corporation's Director General and Head of News have stepped down after a furor relating to a Donald Trump documentary. Today, former ABC journalist and Professor of Journalism at UTS, Monica Attard, on what's unfolded. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.